And welcome back. Kevin Colleen's a busy radio reporter for KMOX in St. Louis, but not so busy that he doesn't have time to do something he obviously enjoys, writing books. His third is just out following earlier efforts. They were Never Hug a Nun and Try to Kiss a Girl. His latest is titled Snow Globes and Hand Grenades. It's a charming story, this time with a little bit of a twist from Kevin. Once again, Kevin turns to the world of his own childhood growing up in Webster Groves, and it follows three Catholic school eighth graders in what's called a story of crime and love. Kevin Colleen joins me in studio. Kevin, nice
Don,
to see
Don,
you again.
Don, why do I keep doing all this? Why am I wasting my time with these stories?
Well, you know, that's a question I suppose I should be asking you. I don't know how you have the time, because I know how hard this radio world is and how hard we work.
Really.
How do you have time for this sort of thing?
Well, you know, I guess what I'm doing is I'm rekindling the adolescent dream that I wanted to be a novelist. And I thought when I was 50, I better get going on that. I'm 55 now. But the way I do it is my wife is kind enough, after the dishwasher's loaded and dinner's done, that I can disappear upstairs and do some writing for a couple hours after dinner.
Yeah, you've loaded the dishwasher, of course, and taken care of making
it. Often emptied it, too. Yeah.
You know, one of the things, I've called the book charming. I've seen reviewers who have said the same thing, and it certainly is that. I think I said to you in an email exchange, they should make a movie out of this book, because it's kind of like a Stand By Me with Catholic school kids, you know.
Yeah, and this time the main character is a girl. That's what's
the main character is a girl, with some, you're familiar, Patrick, an old character. Another thing that I find about the book that I enjoyed is the fact that it deals with eighth graders. And that's a wonderful time, isn't it? Kids are on the verge of that hormonal burst and, you know, teenage years, and life is unfolding ahead.
Yeah,
it's a great time.
It's the last 2 weeks of eighth grade in the spring of 1973. And I think in one of the chapters, it opens with the idea that, you know, nobody could really summarize all that you've been through when you get to the last bell of the last day, because you've climbed over the dead bones of your former selves through all the different classrooms to get to who you are, but you can't remember what it all meant. There's so many experiences, and you're on the verge in eighth grade of no longer being told exactly who you are and where to sit, that there's more of the everyday terror that adults know of, who am I and what do I want to do?
And it's a time of discovery. Your eyes are open a little bit wider than they may have been before.
Yeah.
How well do you remember your own eighth grade, or have I just read about it?
vividly. Another thing about that season was Richard Nixon was in the White House, and it was an era where lying well was an ethic, and we carried that out in grade school. It was a mortal sin to lie, but it was also, you know, a virtue of camaraderie to lie well to the nuns and the priests and the police, and there's all kinds of lying in this book to show that there was a higher loyalty to your friends, that you were going to lie to cover for each other.
Well, there are two, I guess I would call them vignettes in the book, in which you turn to Richard Nixon and Henry Kissinger, one of them playing ping pong, and the other of the former president swimming. I mean, all of a sudden, there that was, I guess, to show that this was going on at the same time.
Yeah, it's a parallel cover-up. This is basically a cover-up story in which a girl is the embodiment of the saying that girls are smarter than boys. And she helps her two guy pals do this enormous cover-up after somebody has put a snow globe paperweight into the hand of the Mary on the church roof. And there's this big investigation to find out who did this sacrilege. We're going to rescind your Catholic high school acceptance letter. You're going to end up at public schools.
The ultimate threat. I don't want to go too far into the plot, because you can give too much away. But Well, I definitely don't want to talk about the part at the end with young Mimi and, you know, her outcome and where she's going in her life, because it took me kind of by surprise, and I would like to just leave that to the reader to discover. Okay, you've taken care of the snow globe. Well, what about the hand grenade? I think we can give that part of it away.
You know, this was the era of Hogan's Heroes and The Great Escape and The Dirty Dozen, so all of us boys, we knew what a hand grenade was for. And in my parish, there was actually a real hand grenade that one of the dads had brought home, and it was on a shelf. And we used to just look at that thing like it was a sirloin steak. And we just thought, of all the virtue that could come of it if we could get that in our hands. And so finally, you know, none of us boys had any guts to do it. I think eventually my friend told me it was donated with a box of used books to the Goodwill. So be careful down there if you're in the, you know.
In the book, looking out book.
Summer reading section.
Yeah. Well, we can say the fact that it was a live hand grenade as well.
Yeah, it had a and so in the book we have a girl finally takes the shelf, the grenade down from the shelf that us boys in real life never had the guts to do. And, you know, it's like somebody told me, Chekhov said, if you mention a gun on the mantle in Act 1, the gun better go off by Act 3. So.
Right. Mimi is the female character.
Mimi Maloney.
Mimi Maloney.
Right? And my wife named her because she said, this character sounds like she's full of baloney. Mimi Maloney.
Mimi Maloney's full of baloney. Well, Kevin Killeen, how does a gentleman in his 50s get into the head of an eighth grade girl?
Well, last year when I wrote this, our daughter was in the eighth grade. So I was eavesdropping on her concerns. And in another sense, though, it was based on a story I heard once about a girl in my own eighth grade who was smarter than the boys. And, you know, the boys were always told, hey, Don, you've been bad, and the principal would look at you. Call your mom right now and tell her you're being sent home right now. Call her. And she'd flip the phone around and you'd dial. But this girl that I heard of called time and temperature and just faked a conversation, and she acted very contrite and then went out on the golf course for the rest of the day. So I thought, that's the kind of girl, the spirit of that moment, that kind of girl who's always has presence of mind in a crisis, that would be a great character to run a book.
And how did, does your eighth grade daughter react to this? I assume she's read the book.
Well, she's working through it. I wish she was more of a reader. I hope she likes it.
How much of this is autobiographical? I mean, is Kevin Killeen one of the characters? Is Kevin Killeen young Patrick with whom you've dealt in other books?
Yeah, and the character who's based on me is just a supporting guy this time. But there really is a real theme in there that was true in my eighth grade. When I was in eighth grade, I was reading a book on John Dillinger, as the character in this book was, and just escaping to this idea of wouldn't it be great to just get on a freight train and get away from all this and run away and, you know, be a great outlaw. And, of course, you know, we never had the guts to do that. But lots of the stuff like the snow globe in the Hand of Mary, nobody put a snow globe up there, but somebody actually put a Bush beer can up there once, and that caused quite an investigation.
This would have been at Mary Queen of Peace, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Which you have named what in the book?
Well, that is a separate, but it's a Mary Queen of our hearts.
Did you feel the need to have to change that? I mean, those of us who have lived in Webster Groves, and we've talked about this before, I recognize all of the places you're talking about, the golf course and et cetera, et cetera. But do you feel the need to protect the name of that church?
Well, I don't want somebody to say, I don't like the way we're portrayed. And also, you want to change it so that you can go beyond the bounds of what even happened and just make stuff up and you don't have to answer for it. That it is a fictitious parish, which certainly was inspired by my time there.
Right. And what about the nuns and the priests?
Yeah, those were some great there's one priest in there based on some people may remember Monsignor O'Toole. He was a friend of Chico and Harpo Marx. He was a real raconteur and a fundraiser, and he used to put on these shows at the church. And he was very independent of the archdiocese. I remember when I was a kid, he'd start to read a letter from the archbishop from the pulpit. He'd say, oh, you've heard all this. These are pretty much in the same. Let's move on. And all the adults would laugh. And I think that guy's making fun of his boss. So there's a character based loosely on him and his spring follies that he used to have and some of the nuns. You know, you draw on your memories.
Yeah. Do you ever get any feedback from some of the people who are still around that you may feel that they're part of the characterizations here?
No, no. Well, some of my boyhood friends in the first book, Never Hug a Nun, you know, one of my boyhood friends who's grown up to be a respectable professional, but we used to spend times robbing the Velvet Freeze when we were young, and the Ben Franklin, I mean. He was glad that the names were changed so that it wouldn't affect his reputation, but nobody's ever said, hey, that's me. They all want to know, who's this, who's that? And it's just, you know, compilations.
Where does, aside from the fact that you're remembering your eighth grade, where does the rest of it come from? You know, in terms of...
Oh, the drive?
Yeah.
I think it's just this silly thing in our family that everybody, seven boys and one girl, we were always trying to be great at something just to get noticed. Because, you know, one was great at basketball, another at drawing, another at writing. And I don't know, just the feeling that, you know, I hate to go through life just being ordinary. And that's what I've ended up.
No.
Because
no.
If you want to write, if you ever want to become truly invisible, just write a book.
Well, that brings to another point, and I'll get back to the book in a moment, but it's published locally.
Yep.
Which is, I think people would be surprised that there are some local publishers here, and it's a good outlet for people like yourself and others that I can think of, isn't it?
Yeah, Blank Slate Press, and they recently merged with Amphori Publishing, which is a Cape Girardeau area small publisher. It's kind of like the microbrewing business. There's a lot of small publishers who are giving people like me a chance.
Do you have any sense of interest in your stories outside of this immediate community? You're well known because of your radio work and also because this is now your third book. But is there any interest outside of St. Louis?
I wish there were. I say there's so little interest or little knowledge of me that one lady from Park Avenue sent me a gilded letter, and it was handwritten and it's embossed with her husband's name on it, but said, "I just finished the three most enjoyable days of my summer reading Never Hug a Nun." And I pull it out and look at it when I'm discouraged and invisible. But, you know, to answer your question, there's not a large distribution or, you know, media tour. I'm a small publisher can't put you on a plane and have you talk to all the Don Marshes across the land.
So. But, of course, with the Internet now, you can do an awful lot, and social media can do an awful lot to self-promote.
Yeah. What I need is a scandal. Or I need to have this book banned, or I need to get arrested for something. Something that would improve my outlook.
Well, let's try to think of something. What might that be? Let's talk a little bit about we've talked about the snow globe and the hand grenade. But the snow globe was the crime. They were serious about finding out who put the snow globe in the hand of Mary at the top of the church. Mm-hmm. This was a very serious investigation that was conducted. I mean, this was like it was a major crime.
Yeah, and, you know, it's just a made-up story, but it's based on in the book, there's the Archdiocese Special Investigator and the police. But in our youth, there was always these terrifying moments where some cop or some principal or the priest would say, "Don, did you do this?" And you'd say, "No, ma'am." But – you know, you could feel your temple blood pounding because we were always lying and covering up something. And that's, I think, why I threw Nixon is because there was always some cover-up. Like one time, a quick story, I threw a partially chewed caramel across a cafeteria and it lodged in the beehive hairdo of a substitute teacher. And she was just, decimated. So she told the principal and they called us up. I think I was like the fifth grade or something. And this was before a lot of, your orthodontic caramel forensics really came in where they could have solved it right away. So they said, "Who did this? Who did this?" And I finally admitted it. And she didn't believe me. And she went down there and yelled at the rest of the class and said, "How dare you let Kevin Killeen come up here and try to take credit for this? He's always trying to take credit for this sort of thing." But that's the kind of thing. We're going to sit here until the guilty one does it. I mean, there were so many moments like that in my Catholic grade school where there was always an inquisition that just suddenly took over your life.
Well, here you have a bona fide police officer coming into the picture. I mean, that seems almost a little extreme.
Yeah. Well, in the story, they thought whoever did this is probably responsible for opening all those fire hydrants and, throwing tomatoes at buses and all the other wave of juvenile crime. The police never in real life worked with the church to come after us. But in this story, I thought it would be nice to bring church and state together because just to have the ultimate interrogation. The gang that I ran around with, some of them have grown up, to be legitimate citizens apart from me. We were in we could have gone, on death row the way it was headed. It was a rough parish gang.
Well, that takes us back to, that eighth grade time again. That's when kids do get into trouble. It's a time when kids do take chances because they think nothing can ever happen to them. That's what's so charming about that period.
Just to turn it on you for a minute, can you remember the worst thing that you ever did in grade school?
Yes.
Delinquent-wise, what was it?
I can't tell you.
Go ahead. It's fun.
I'm not sure the statute of limitations has run out on it. No, it was bad, and I just don't want to talk about it.
See, well, that's the way it was. All of us had that, you know, these things that we were covering up, and hopefully, you know, they get us in high school and shape us into new men.
I can tell you one thing that I did that was I thought was pretty cool. I was had a time when I was supposed to be home, and I was out at a friend's house on my bike. He was halfway across town, and it was late, and I knew when I got back I'd have to give an excuse for, you know, having gotten back so late. So I got back and said that my bike had been stolen, and I left it at my at my friend's house.
That's pretty good.
Well, it was pretty good, but then I lived in fear that the cops were going to look for my bike and find it at my friend's house and arrest him for having stolen my bike.
Filing a false police report. Now you're in charge of this show.
Yeah, right. That just shows you how far I've come or not, one way or the other. Anyway, but there were other things as well, and that was the time when all of this was happening. What's the worst thing you ever did, aside from the caramel incident?
Well, I'd have to think about that. You know.
Come on!
I can't think of anything.
You're worse than I am.
Yeah.
What about some of the pranks that some of your buddies pulled during those days?
Well, let's see. I'll tell you one thing I did. I was hesitating to say this, but. And I've often thought bad about this. One time I put some firecrackers in somebody's mailbox, you know, to the mail slot to their house.
That's standard stuff, Kevin. Go ahead.
But I thought they were home, but what I later learned was that nobody was home and it could have burned down the house. It did not, thank God. But somebody said, hey, did you do that? And I didn't admit it. But they said that left char marks on their rug. You could have burned down the house. And that incident really made me think, you know, it's not all fun and games. You got to, you know, think what could happen to people.
Do you think that that kids today, eighth grade kids today, are pretty much the same as they were in your day?
No, I think, and this just disappoints me. They're so well behaved. You know, on a Friday night, I'll drive by like the Webster Groves High School parking lot, and they're all playing basketball and laughing. And my own kids are talking about doing their homework on time. I think. Because we grew up in the 70s, that, you know, we were still trying to recover from the 60s, and we just sort of took the decade off to, you know, be irresponsible. I think there's a lot more responsibility now that I see with kids, my own kids. Like, I'm always projecting onto them that they're about to do something that I would have done, and I find that, you know, they're not thinking of that at all.
I wonder about consequences today as opposed to consequences in the time that you're talking about. I mean, what sort of consequences would there have been in your eighth grade, or in the eighth grade of the people in your book, for being caught for doing something wrong?
Well, and we were caught at things where we were taken down to the police station, Webster Groves Police Station, and boy, that was a stern looking building with its two milk glass globes on either side of the entrance that said "Police." You thought
right out of Central Casting,
yeah. And, you know, you'd be behind the wire glass window waiting for your parents to come pick you up, and you'd be picking at the vinyl cover. And they'd put you on – I was on probation for a year once for – I don't remember what it was. It might have been blowing up a model car on the Highway 44 construction site. You know, just a little plastic car,
sure.
Not a real car.
No, I get it.
But, you know, to be on probation, that was like, you know – the thought that at any moment, if you did one more thing wrong, which is your natural inclination, that you could end up in reform school and James Cagney's roommate.
Right. Or the metal cup across the bars. Right. What about today? I wonder if they still bring kids down to the police station.
Well, I don't know. It seems like I'm, again, so disappointed in my own children. None of my children have been arrested, and they're all, you know, in their, you know, teens and 20s by now.
No, they haven't been arrested, but you have no idea some of the things that they have done, I'm sure. I mean, I'm still learning things about my kids. They're in their 30s that they did, and I'm just scratching my head. My God, if I had ever known that, I don't know what I would have done.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah, well.
So nothing wrong with having good kids, though, right?
Yeah, I'm glad, and that's maybe I've glorified delinquency too much in this series. I'm going to, you know, change my tone if I write another book.
Is there another one in the works?
Well, Lord willing, you know, in public demanding it, I might do a high school book.
Oh, wow.
You know.
Advancing your main character, or Patrick, in this case, to the high school level.
Yeah, but, that's such a crowded genre. I've had a field day writing about grade school kids because nobody really writes about them. But now, if you want to do a high school book, you're competing with, you know, the great high school books that are out there.
Sure. We only have a minute left. And again, I try to stay away in these interviews, Kevin, talking too much about plot because you want people to read the book. But in the time that we have left, just give a general overview, your sales pitch for why people should pick up this book.
Well, it's a funny book. It's from the genre of what you call a comic novel or a comedy novel, where there better be some laughter. And that's my intention. And I think it's a funny story to put some kids in a tight situation where they're in trouble, which happened to us a lot. And the first two books were about a boy, but this book is, you know, if you're a female reader, you will enjoy the escapades of Mimi Maloney and her cover-up.
And I'll just say, without giving anything away, that it raises at the end of the book a social issue that a lot of people are talking about today, which is an important one to discuss. At least I think so. I enjoyed the book, Kevin, so much. Snow Globes and Hand Grenades by Kevin Killeen, Adventures of an Eighth Grade Catholic Girl.
And may I say, I'll be at the Maplewood Bookhouse Saturday in the afternoon.
Okay.
On Manchester.
Okay. Very good. Kevin Killeen, thank you so much.
Thank you,
Don.
We look
forward to the next one. I've read all of them and enjoyed every one of them. Thank you, sir. Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk with Joe Johnston about his new book, It Ends Here, Missouri's Last Vigilante. Then we'll take a look at some of the major local and statewide political stories of 2015 and what's ahead in 2016. That will be with St. Louis Public Radio reporters Joe Manis and Jason Rosenbaum. Archive versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org/stlonair. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.